Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. If you're listening via our new Radio Plus iPhone app, did you know you can browse through recent podcasts according to show, or you can sort by companies discussed, even by the name of the guests? If you don't have the Radio Plus iPhone app yet, you'll want to download it. It's free via the iTunes App Store.
Barry Ritholtz with us from The Big Picture. Been really waiting to talk to Barry again. Barry, good morning.
Good morning.
You have an elegant chart on The Big Picture this morning. It is just textbook Apple gloom, not the right toys. It sells off right. It's a, what we call, folks, a kiss. It kisses the 200-day moving average and then up like a rocket. Describe that.
Well, you know, a lot of traders especially look at the 200-day moving average as their line in the sand. Let me also point out, however, like all caveats that come with technicals, back in June, Apple managed to pierce that line and then eventually snap above it. Historically, we've seen it be pretty decent support. There is just a massive, massive institutional base of holders in Apple. And unless people think that the long-term story is gone, that's why the 200-day works out pretty well.
Let me rip up the script here and go off Brian Belsky this morning with Oppenheimer, Barry. Brian making a case that in a range-bound churning market, you really want to be in things everybody knows. You don't want to go out and find something obscure. You want to invest in stuff that's visible. Obviously, Apple, he mentioned that.
Do you agree? Tom, let me know when we're in a range-bound churning market. We're down almost 20% from the highs. That, in my technical book, is not a range-bound market. That is a market moving lower, and in my opinion, it's on the expectation of recession or economic slowdown-driven earnings fall-off. A range-bound market is where you're stuck in a tight band and you don't make much progress
right. In
either direction. We seem to be making progress. It's just backwards.
Yeah, and that coming from August 31st, by range-bound, I was describing, Barry, from about August 8th, where there's like a 700-point swing. But you're right, there's a negative tilt to it, to say
the
least.
Absolutely. I mean, Apple may be the exception because it's managed to come through the credit crisis and everything else. That, you know, you've had Peter Buchvar on over the years. Peter has said there are four classes of assets. There's stocks, bonds, commodities, and Apple. And really, there's some truth to that.
Well, Barry, what do you attribute all the volatility to?
Well, some of it is Skynet and all of the high-frequency trading that's going on. I have yet to hear a firm basis for what percentage of daily trading the co-located servers and algorithmic-driven silicon is responsible for. 70% gets bandied about. I think that's high, but it's certainly a substantial percentage, and whether it's 20 or 40 or 60%, that increases volatility as opposed to having us carbon-based units manning the various stations in terms of specialists and what have you. But there's also this transitional period that, remember last year people were afraid of a double dip, and then we had QE2. Earlier this year, people were afraid of a double dip, although at this point it's probably too far. This will be a new recession, not a double dip. And there was the expectation of a Fed rescue and the moral hazard of another bailout. That's part of the problem with bailouts, is that they generate the expectation of more bailouts. There's also this really hair trigger on the short side, because look at what happened yesterday, the last hour of trading.
Wow.
Every little comment from every central bank or anywhere is thought of, well, here comes another $1 trillion in liquidity.
Barry Ritholtz with us from The Big Picture. Barry, I'm looking at the VIX. The VIX for me tells me what not to do, not what to do. How do you use the VIX elevated here at 40?
You know, we like to use the VIX as an extreme indicator. When you get a wild spike that's considerably higher off of recent levels, it usually suggests you're heading towards some sort of a denouement, some sort of a capitulation. What makes it a little bit challenging is it becomes background noise after a while. If you remember in the 90s, the VIX was single digits for long stretches of time, or low double digits, and now we've been in this 30-40 range for a long time. It's when you see these wild spikes, look at 87 and 2000 and 2008, you get these big spikes that let you know that it's time to start making that wish list of what you want to buy.
You mentioned back when everybody was worried about a double dip. We're starting to pick up some forecasts here and there about not a double dip, but another recession.
That's right.
Recession, weak recovery, another recession. Are you in that camp too?
We were started the year about a 10% chance of recession 12 months out. We're now over 50%. The question really becomes, is there all that much of a difference between a 0 to 1% GDP and an actual GDP that's in contraction? The big concern, and I don't want to paint a horrific picture, the big concern in my perspective is just an ordinary cyclical recession that gives you some contraction in earnings. It gives you an increase in unemployment and a cap on wages. But given the number of homeowners that are, you know, hanging on by their fingernails,
right.
the data I got most recently from MBAA was 8 million homeowners are 30 days behind their mortgage. Now, it may just be people are a month behind and they'll eventually catch up. But in the event of something unpleasant happening, if people lose their job or if one of the breadwinners has to take a cutback in salary or hours, it sets up the possibility of the next leg down in housing, more foreclosures, more price pressure, and the real loser in that scenario becomes the banks. We really have no idea what the exposure of all the bigs are to that sort of another problematic move in housing. I look at housing as 5% overvalued, which is not horrific. We were almost 40% overvalued 5 years ago. The problem is most of these markets that come off of a credit bubble, come off of a boom-bust period, tend to clear out by dramatically overshooting to the downside, and we have not allowed housing to do that because we're afraid of the consequences.
Barry, let's talk about the equity markets. Doug Cass writes notes here, up, down, up, down. Have you changed your view recently, or do you go into the fourth quarter with a real conviction formed over 2011 about belief in the markets?
You know, our phrase in the office is strong opinions loosely held. We have these convictions, and as soon as we see an inkling they're wrong, we reverse them. We use a lot of historical data, a lot of quantitative analysis. The backdrop tells us that when you have a classic crash like we saw in 07-09, very reminiscent of 73-74, looks a little bit like 33, or go back to the turn of the century, the 06-07 period, you typically see a snapback from that. On average, it's about 70%. Now, we ran 105%. Partially because the fall happened so quickly, somewhat due to QE2, but we ended up snapping back further. History tells us that the average correction from that snapback is about 25%. So maybe because we went so far so fast, it could be a little worse. Here we are. We're not even 20%. If we go with the average, hey, we're 5 or 10% away from, you know, where we should find some base. The only concern is, in this environment, heading into a possible second recession, depending on how earnings come in. You know, last time we were on, we talked about how Wall Street analysts really overestimate earnings under
right.
normal circumstances, and they just completely, you know, mess up when the economy turns. They're always a couple of quarters behind, and so if you have a recession, before 2000, they were too high by 15%. 2001 was 25%, and the real outlier, 2008, the consensus estimates for the S&P 500 were 40-plus percent too high. I don't think we're going to see that, but certainly a 20-25% overshoot is very possible.
Within the broad picture of the big picture, in all of your collected work, including, I love your thing in the morning where you put together 10 things to read mm-hmm. out there. There's always something interesting in there. Thanks for the Bloomberg stuff you put in there. But Barry, the corporations seem to be the linchpin here. Do they have the room now to make the proverbial, I love this word, synergies? You got to hate it, Barry, as much as I do. But do they have the room out there to do Bank of America synergies if we get economic 1% GDP?
I don't know about synergies. Look, the good news is that corporate America's balance sheets and their financial conditions, about as clean as it's been in half a century. I mean, they're carrying relatively little debt at very low levels, especially if you look at outside the financial sector. Corporate America is doing really well. What history has shown us is after we go through these periods of putting together these big conglomerates, we then go through these periods of spinning these conglomerates into separate pieces. Just HP is now talking about getting rid of what was built over the past decade. I wouldn't be surprised to see a variety of the financial names. Think about Bank America. The whole seems to be worth less than the sum of its parts. Spin out Countrywide and Merrill and all those other acquisitions, and you end up with a lot more than a $6 stock. So I think we've gone through the synergy period. We're now moving away from that. Back to basics. Keep it simple. Focus on what you do well. Focus on your core competency and stop trying to financially engineer your way to profits. Put out a product that people want to buy, charge a fair price, make a reasonable profit. Everybody wins.
Let's leave it there. Barry Ritholtz, thank you so much, folks. Can't say enough about the eclectic sense of his website, The Big Picture. It's got Ritholtz input, and then he goes out and finds other people to involve as well. This interview with Barry Ritholtz, it's free. It's out on Bloomberg Radio Plus. Thank you for listening worldwide right now off of your iPhone. It's at iTunes. You go to the App Store, and it's there under Bloomberg Radio Plus with a plus sign, and we are just humbled by the amount of downloads. Do you have that
you can also
text thing there?
Take your iPhone, and you text the word radio to 36500, and we'll send you the link right away. Message and data rates may apply. You can also go to the iTunes store.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2011.